Your name is Stryker?
Yes, it is.
That's fire. Wow.
I love sandwiches.
It's called tuna on toast.
I spit.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I love music, and I love those that create it.
Stryker's here.
Tuna on toast.
Yes. Tuna on toast.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of Tuna on Toast. It is your friend Ted Stryker here, and Jacob Knoll is going to be on in just a minute. Of course, Jacob Knoll is the son of the late, great Bradley Knoll, the frontman from Sublime. Jacob wasn't even one when his dad passed. And what I love about Jacob, and I want to get this out straight away, he is smart, he is hardworking, he is charming, he is likable. I am rooting for him the rest of his life. And here's two huge things in his life this exact moment as we sit here right now. Number one, his new full-length album is out. It's called Jacob's Castle. Jacob's Castle, there's like 14 songs. It's really good. The inspiration, I'm just going to give a little taste and then you can hear the details when Jacob is on. It is like a hint of inspiration from, say, the 90s mixed with the present and the future. And he has a whole take and a way that he's making it. And it's awesome. And Epitaph Records. Good for Jacob. So that's Jacob's Castle. Number two, I'm sure you heard, he is now the singer of Sublime with Bud and Eric. It is Sublime. And Jacob Knoll is the singer. And we talk about learning these songs and hearing and memorizing the lyrics and the music that his dad wrote. I mean, I got the goosebumps a couple times during this chat. I hope you like it. By the way, he had no shirt on during the interview, and he was on a paddleboard in the ocean. You can watch the entire interview and all the Tuna on Toast library on my YouTube channel, which is Tuna on Toast with Stryker. Tuna on Toast with Stryker. Hit me up on Instagram anytime. Thank you for the support. Spread the word. Thank you to Jacob Knoll. I can't wait to see you in person and give you a big, big hug, man, and a pat on the back and shake your hand. I really enjoyed this. So without any further ado, please welcome to Tuna on Toast, Jacob Knoll.
What's up, Stryker? How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Sorry for being late, man. I'm paddleboarding right now.
Thanks for being on. You're the first guest I've had without a shirt on. What's going on behind you? Give me the view.
Oh, that's the bay here in beautiful Long Beach. I'm on a paddleboard.
How long have you been out paddleboarding today?
Just for like the last 30 minutes with my awesome fucking DJ product over there.
What's going on over there?
We're going to be playing Coachella soon with, he plays in Sublime with me, and yeah, it's been a lot of fun, man.
We're sitting here a few days before Coachella, which is awesome, but also I have to start with what I think is the best and most exciting news. While it's all exciting, Jacob's Castle, there's like 14 songs. They're all about to be released, man. How are you feeling in terms of nerves and excitement and all that leading up to this?
Man, it feels so good to finally have material like that about to be released. It's songs that I've worked really, really hard on I've toiled, and it's all music that is very much me, you know? I mean, I think there's always sort of like a problem when you're in the studio and you're like, there's like a dissonance between what you hear in your head versus what gets actually put on the record. And this record is the first time that dissonance, the gap, was closed. My amazing producer, John Joseph, is just like a wizard. And he and I, working in concert as the team behind the scenes on Jacob's Castle, we were able to really breathe life into the statues that I saw in my head. So as soon as people hear them, I'm going to be really stoked, man.
Enter the Castle is the name of the album. It's Jacob's Castle. So as of now, so are you welcoming, like, you want to connect with as many people as possible? And when we connect, you're inside my castle.
Exactly right. I like the idea of it's so funny because in the beginning, so many people behind the scenes didn't like the name. The first person who really supported it was my manager, Kevin Zinger. And he was like, no, it's sick, man. It's like collaborative. That's the idea kind of, you know, and all names are inherently sort of goofy. But with the idea of Jacob's Castle, I want it to feel like a collaboration, like a collective. Everybody's welcome. Sort of like your favorite Saturday morning cartoon you can tune into weekly. People come see us at shows and stuff. And it's like this running narrative kind of thing. I'm big into storytelling.
Without you even explaining that, I understood what Jacob's Castle meant, especially with the title of the album. And I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Of course, I appreciate you sending me all the songs. I love Supervillain. I love Lights Out, and I love Motel Radio. I also like Time Traveler, but the three previous, as of now, are my favorite songs. Can you tell me about Supervillain?
Man, thank you so much, man. Like, yeah, those are some of my favorites, too. Supervillain, yeah, that's the first track on the record. It's one of the ones that I wrote with my friend Tim Armstrong. My label Epitaph set up some writing sessions with me and Tim, and it was, like, totally a lot of fun. The way it starts out with he and I is usually we make kind of, like, this old school soulful, like rock steady song, and then I take it to my producer John Joseph and we just ruin it. Kind of put some modern stuff in it, and just I just, you know, show him weird sounds that I like. I'm like, let's incorporate this, you know, more distortion. And then it kind of became the track on the record. And to me, that was always about, like, you know, that song's sort of about, like, parasocial relationships, set through the lens of Saturday morning cartoons, and the nature of, like, people can be incredibly in love with the character they have created for you. But it's a sort of possessive love. If you look at those, you know, Saturday morning cartoons, you know, the supervillain never actually kills the hero. You know, I feel like they don't want to do that. They sort of just want to tie them up and, like, go, I've got you now. The laser beam's pointed at you. So we had a lot of fun with samples in that song, and just trying to take that theme. And I thought it'd be the perfect opener to the record to kind of set the tone for the weird fantasy craziness that ensues in the rest of the record.
Right. So let's, for a second here, chat about Tim Armstrong and Epitaph. Yes. Records. So Brett Gurewitz, who started Epitaph, of course, he's also in Bad Religion. He's been on my show many times. Were you, I'm not asking if you were nervous going to work with Tim, but what were your expectations walking into a room with Tim? And did you have ideas going in, and did he bring just music or lyrics? Like, how did that collaboration go down?
No, yeah, at first I was, you know, maybe a little nervous or apprehensive or just stoked. Cause, I mean, I remember I grew up with the fucking Out Come the Wolves poster on my wall. And I was like, you know, Tim's such a legend. And,
yeah,
you know, I grew up hearing that, you know, Betty Blowtorch song, I Want to Be on Epitaph. Like, to me, it was like just a dream come true. No way, this is so cool. I don't even really play punk rock music. This is crazy. But they were just so cool and down with me being experimentative. And going into the studio with Tim, he was just like the nicest guy ever. Like, you know him. It's like meeting a dude who's like your long lost uncle or brother or something. He just treats everybody with such friendliness and respect. And like, it was one of those easy processes where he'd have something or I'd have something. I think we co-wrote three songs together. Mm. And it would always come together very quickly, very effortlessly, and ton of fun. And then that whole idea of taking, you know, his classic old school soulful, you know, songwriting style, and then sort of mixing it with like the modern day, you know, internet age weirdness that, you know, sort of my wheelhouse. You kind of get this whole, you know, past meets future vibe, this retro futurism that we're trying to sort of capture in Jacob's Castle. But it's fun doing it that way because it's less contrived. Like, it's more just, you know, experiment as you go, kind of just throw it all together and see what sticks.
You just said two words that stuck out of all of that, and I enjoyed that answer, retrofuturism. Mm-hmm. So to me, that sounds like, how can we not just act like we're from 1995 or 1985, but maybe use like 20% of the inspiration from that music, and the rest of it is the present and the future authentically me. Am I on the right track?
Dude, you said it more. Can I like quote that and use that? That's exactly like the mission statement, man. Yeah, taking that inspiration from the era that I grew up with and grew up around, and that is, you know, a part of my family's history, but also authentically, you know, mixing it with, like you said, all the other stuff happening currently and with an eye towards the future in an authentic way. You know, not trying to chase the trends, but still aware of them in a way. Like, okay, this is where I kind of see Southern California music heading with a lot of different bands that I see playing around locally. So much fun doing it, and hugely flattering that you get that, man. Like, I really appreciate you digging the project like that.
Of course. What is the first song that you made off Enter the Castle, and did that really set the tone for the rest of the tunes?
Totally, yeah. So, you know, I had the vision for the project and I had all the sounds that I wanted to incorporate, but it took a while to find the right producer. You know, I'd do a bunch of different writing sessions with all these people. And it was only once I walked into that studio in San Pedro, California, the nameless studio of John Joseph. He's so funny and like classic. Like, he thinks studio names are jive, I guess. He's always, every time like a publisher's like, what do we list as the studio name? And I'm like, John, what's your studio name? And he's like, it's called Squid Fly Grime Barnacle Studio in San Pedro. I'm like, what? Really? And he gives me a different name every time like that. And I walked in there and he just had like the perfect vibe. Like you kind of get the impression John's a dude who he could make any genre of music and just he really gets off on, you know, just seeking those sounds and you know, capturing that moment. And so it was always this really fun thing. So I gave him exactly, you know, the ingredients that I wanted to use. And we started cooking. And the first song that we came up with together and co-wrote was Close Enough, which was the first single that I put out right before I got an Epitaph officially. And I did like my own DIY kind of music video for it, you know, rehearsing in this awesome space in Signal Hill. And it just sort of, it totally set the tone. I'm like, okay, here's these really grindy, like saw wave synths, these retro synth leads that also kind of like harken back to some, you know, West Coast sort of sounding, those high pitched sort of Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre synth. And we kind of went from there. And then I'm like, you know, okay, here's the vocal effects we want. And that was sort of like the blueprint for everything we wanted to go moving forward. These weird, like super buzzy $20 acoustic guitar sounds. Like it was just so much fun. And then from then on, we've continued to work together. We're already working on, we got a bunch of tracks already ready for the second record.
Wow.
Which I cannot wait to get. I just want to like keep releasing stuff. Cause once you get into that vein where you're creating music that really resonates with you and you feel like you've found a sound, you just want to keep doing it and chasing it. So it's been like the most fun writing and recording process I've ever had, for sure.
That's awesome.
And I hope that translates into Enter the Castle. People can hear that, I hope.
Right. And I really hope that people start with song one and take their time with each track on there, because I mean we've discussed like your take and what the inspiration was to make all these songs and the retro and the futuristic. I absolutely love it. Listen, I have a zillion friends. Actually, no, I don't. I have like four friends. But a lot of my friends growing up had family in a variety of different businesses, and it was no guarantee that they were going to go into that business. Most of them didn't. Why didn't you go into any different fields? I'm trying to spit this out properly.
Dude, no, that is such a good framing of the question, too, because my usual deflect is like, oh, you know, if your dad runs a car dealership, you know, work at a car dealership. But it's true. Mostly, it doesn't happen all the time, you know? Sometimes people want to go do their own thing. I guess I was always just sort of drawn to it, the allure of the story aspect of what it means to be in the business. You hear all these cool stories about your favorite musicians and all the amazing adventures they get into and the drama and the evolution and then the young kids that they would inspire. Like that's really what drew me to this line of work. That's the juice for me, is the performative aspect and the storyline behind it all. I think, you know, in the stories we tell everybody, we try to, you know, epitomize our lives. And, you know, what better story than rock and roll?
Absolutely. At what age did you first get an instrument?
Oh, man, 12 years old. I remember. I went up to my grandparents' house. It's right there. Oh, but nice. I doxed myself. I actually learned to play guitar right on that porch in that lime green house over there. And my grandpa had this guitar that was always be sitting in his office, like in his study. And I'd always go and touch it. It was like, don't touch grandpa's guitar. That's like this, you know, super nice Blues King Electro Gibson guitar. It's beautiful. And he's like, you want to be a guitar player, do you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, all right, well, you're not playing on that. And he had this other guitar that he was like in a closet that he like blew dust off of, and this little crappy thing with stickers all over it. And he's like, this is what you'll learn on. And we put some nylon strings on it so it didn't hurt my little 12-year-old hands. And he taught me how to play free chords. And he's like, now you can play basically every rock and roll song. And the first song I learned to play was La Bamba.
Wow. Were you singing La Bamba as you were learning to play it?
I was. And I wasn't much of a singer at first, you know. But I remember after he taught me a few things, he taught me how to make a bar chord, like, you know, an F, you know, E-shaped bar chord. And he was like, your training is complete. Now you can play literally any song on the planet. And I was like, whoa. Just slide it up. And he's like, just listen to the song and, you know, figure it out from there. And I'm like, okay. And that's pretty much been the foundation of everything that I do. I'm not much of a guitar player, but with having, you know, just bar chords and mimicking a bastardized version of a song, I could at least learn it enough to sing along. And then the singing kind of became a thing for me. And I just trained and rehearsed singing for so long before I ever got a trainer or a coach or an instructor, because I don't know, it was just this unexplainable, magical kind of process. The stuff I really liked listening to as a kid was like Queens of the Stone Age was my favorite band, and Tool, and System of a Down. And I would just try to sing like those guys. I would try to listen to their like amazing vocal lines and try to do it, you know, whether it was like the subtle, cool, you know, falsetto of Josh Homme, or like the wild craziness in System of a Down from Darren and fucking
Surge. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, to me, you know, Maynard always seemed like this unattainably perfect singer goal. And so I'm like, if I could just sing along and try to get it as close as I can to these guys, then maybe I can get somewhere. And it took me a while, but nowadays I'm actually pretty proud of what I can do vocally. And it's, yeah, actually, I'm glad you talked to me about all this, because going through the history reminds me, sometimes you wake up and you're like, why am I still fucking doing this? And now I'm like, you know what? That is why, man. There's like this weird little grain of magic, and you pass that curse on to the next young folks, you know?
And then you talked about training and putting in the work, and here you are, and you've been at it for a little bit now, and Enter the Castle. I mean, I think people are going to be blown away by all of the songs. Were you ever at any point like thinking, what am I doing with this? Why am I in this bit? There's something else I want to do. Or basically from early 20s on, you're locked into being a musician.
No, it's true. I mean, I always had it, you know, as something I was trying to do, but a lot of people don't know that, you know, I was doing music and touring for like 10 years with my first band, Law.
Law, yeah.
And never really went anywhere. And that can become a little, you know, what do you call it? A little discouraging. So always in the background, I was going to school to be an English teacher. And I've always really enjoyed writing, and I've always wanted to go into TV writing or short stories or that whole thing. You know, that's the world where I feel the most comfortable. Being a writer all kind of lacks that performative aspect. And I remember every time I would falter with my first band, I'd be like, man, fuck this, man, I'm going to be a teacher. I remember my bass player, Logan, at the time, he'd be like, dude, you always talk about being a teacher, but you know, if you get up on that stage and you're in front of a humongous audience, like what's the bigger classroom than that? And I realized that it wasn't just, you know, teaching the classics to folks that I wanted. I wanted to portray my takes in interesting ways. And for me, I think performing in bands and touring around and playing music, it's going to be something I always love to do and want to continually always do, but it's just the first step. I would love to, over time, branch out, become multimedia and multifaceted, and just really get to tell interesting stories from people around me that I get to see in many different ways.
Oh, that's cool as hell, man.
Thank you, man.
A few days away from the album release, a few days away from Coachella. Have you had have you had a ton of rehearsals with Bud and Eric? How has that been going?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have liked to have more, but truly in this past like week and a half, 2 weeks, it's been like all consuming. Like we have an awesome rehearsal space, and we get in there, run the set twice a day. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that for several days in a row. So really, after a while, you know, the rehearsal won't even help. You kind of just got to get on the stage and just, you know, cross your fingers. You know, I've never been much of a guitar player, and I've never claimed to be. I can never replace my father, even vocally, in the way that he would do stuff. So for me, I'm trying to do what I'm good at. You know, I can never be better than my dad in his own lane, but I can try to faithfully portray the music and do what I can do best. Some things that I can do even better that I've just trained in different areas than he did. I've really come into my own, and I have confidence in myself now, being 28 and you know, a seasoned musician in my own right.
Yeah.
I think that the fans are in store for a really interesting iteration of Sublime, and just having Bud and Eric together, being, you know, so close again and having so much fun and everyone smiling and having a good time. You know, if we flub some notes or forget some parts here and there, it's almost missing the point. I want to go up there and just have a fucking blast with my family.
Yes.
And the whole storytelling aspect, getting to like carry over that fire, carry the stories that my father told in his lifetime. It's just a cool thing to be doing in this piece of time. And I don't see it as like a resting place for me. It's just the beginning of all the other potential things that might come up out of this.
Man, my heart is like very heavy after hearing that answer.
Man, thank you so much. It's all straight from the heart, man.
I know it's
crazy. It's almost intense. Like sometimes I rehearse and I'm like, it's just, like you said, it hits heavy on the heart. And I'm like, I don't know how I can do this. But every time you do it, it gets a little bit more methodical, a little bit more robotic, and you're able to separate yourself from that emotional nature so you don't, you know, bust out into tears every time you rehearse or play.
You know, sadly, you lost your dad. I don't even think you were 1 year old, so you correct. Don't really know him, but you know the words, you know the music to all of the songs that he wrote. Are there any Sublime songs that stick out to you and you think, this song freaking rules? I can't, my dad did this.
Totally, yeah. I only knew, you know, a select few songs that I heard growing up. I never really dove in their discography, so, you know, now that I have this gig, I want to treat it like a gig, be like, okay, I'm their singer now. I got to learn all this material. And I go back to the catalog and you learn all this cool, interesting stuff about, you know, who the writer was and what they might have been going through and all the different reoccurring themes and motifs and melodies. And I think like a lot of what Sublime is really well exemplified in a song like Greatest Hits, Secret Tweaker Pad, both of which we're playing. Trying to remember some other ones that I really like. There are all the different aspects of Sublime that are really awesome. Like, they're really good. Like, he was really good as a lyricist of, like, you know, tying all this cool, interesting local color so it would, like, be palatable and digestible and, like, legible to, you know, the average person that he could, you know, was in his vicinity. But he was also well-read, and so there's, like, this interesting, like, mythology and, like, a sense of, like, authority in the way he's talking. Like, in Pawn Shop, like, if you look at those lyrics, like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, is he saying albino made of stone? Like, is that like, but it's just, it sounds like you could tell he was just channeling what the mythology of what they thought was so amazing about reggae music, you know, and blending that into their lens of punk rock and ska. So throughout doing that, it's just amazing. And to cap it off, my favorite, like, acoustic solo song that he does is the acoustic version of Pool Shark. I feel like that, like, perfectly encapsulates, like, yes, his storytelling and, you know.
Yes.
Oh, and his pain.
God. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Gwen Stefani was on my show a few weeks ago, and we talked about the song Saw Red. Are you familiar with Saw Red?
Yes. We want to play it. We have it all rehearsed up, but we're, like, you know, running. Our set's pretty tight already. We don't want to go over the 50 that Paul's giving us. So we are like, we'll do Saw Red if Gwen's down, but I know she just got back with her band. I don't want to, you know, put her on the spot or whatever, but I think I might go try to say hi at the show and be like, let's do it week two. Come on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I saw her at a Christmas party and she mentioned you at the Christmas party all those months ago. And then she mentioned you when her and I were having a chat. What about, here's my idea. This is, and you can say, Stryker, you're the dumbest man of all time. What you link up with somebody in your age group who inspires you, a female, and you redo Saw Red with your own, in your own style and your own voice?
I would love to do that. Do like a Jacob's Castle version.
Yes.
And link up with, like, yeah, like an upcoming female artist.
Or like Bishop Briggs or like Kay Flay. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out there.
No, there is a bunch of amazing options. Like, I think that would be so much fun. To do a cool fucking modern take on that. Yes. Yes. Without a doubt. 100%.
Is there going to be a Jacob's Castle full tour? And are there going to be a ton of Sublime shows that you guys have planned?
Yes to both. So yeah, people always often ask me, are you going to do both? Are you going to just do only Sublime for a little while? It's like, no, I'm doing fully both full time. Very busy man these days. To that effect, Jacob's Castle is doing a Coachella pre-party this Thursday. You can check that out. I'll be posting about it on my Instagram. Very excited to do that pre-party. Then after Coachella, Sublime has, I think, a festival out in Florida. And then from Florida, I'm flying to Nicaragua to do a Jacob's Castle show in Nicaragua. And then we come back. We get a couple weeks off, or I think it was just a week off in May. And then Jacob's Castle launches the full, like, you know, West Coast May tour. We're going to have a bunch of different dates coming up. Oh, I don't think I can announce it until after Coachella.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Radius clauses. But
yeah.
I've heard through the pipeline we will be playing in May.
Okay.
And I have a bunch of shows coming up. But those will be just kind of fun, you know, like, I'm sure they'll be smaller scale, but we've been getting a bunch of new listeners and I really want to build up our fan base in the West Coast here. So I'm going to be playing with a bunch of my favorite bands that I love, like my boys in Strange Case, Shus and The Happies, and just a bunch of bands that I've come up with in different areas of my life who I really believe in. And it's just going to be a fun time of weirdness and genre bending, mixing, fun, crazy adventures.
Man.
Enter the castle.
I'm in the castle. I'm part of the community. I may be the senior citizen in this castle. But, dude, I'm 1,000% in with you on this.
Yes. Yes. You've been duly knighted, my friend. And it's so much fun getting to do this stuff. And I can't thank you enough for the spot, man. It really is legendary and a huge honor.
Thank you so much for jumping on with me. Enjoy the paddle boarding. You guys, yes. Enter the castle. Let's start with song one, go through every single song, and then find Sublime, where my man Jacob, he's the singer with Bud and Eric.
Yes. All of that and more. Let's fucking go. Appreciate you guys. Love you. And we will see you all next time on the Saturday Morning Adventures of Jacob's Castle.
That's another episode of Stryker's Tuna on Toast. Promise, it'll get better. most likely. For sure. Maybe.